will take their seats.
That's a really good reason.
All right, let's go ahead and get seated so we can start the next part of the session. Okay. So we'll reconvene, and next on the agenda, Dr. Brad Therrell is going to present the results of the data that he's put together at the request of the committee. Dr. Therrell is director of the National Newborn Screening and Genetics Resource Center and is a research professor of the Department of Pediatrics at University of Texas Health Sciences Center in San Antonio. So, Brad?
So thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here again. This is actually a report that began over 2 years ago, and it came from some deliberations in the follow-up and treatment subcommittee, which were initiated because of this concept that all programs are able to match up the babies that have been born with the babies that have been screened, which is not the case. So here's a little bit of the brief background. We brought forward a report from the subcommittee to the Secretary's Advisory Committee in January 22nd, 2010. And we had a number of discussions. And basically, the committee thought this was a great idea, but wanted to have a little more data. And there were actually some discussions about whether or not more than just the serial number of the newborn screening spot should be collected on the birth certificate. For instance, should the data from the screens be there? I'm not going to get into that part again because we sort of beat that one about and decided that maybe we'd put that one off. But we were asked to develop as a next step a short white paper on the recommended changes to the birth certificate and what was available today and why we needed that, and that's what we've done. So just as an introduction, newborn screening is defined as a core public health program by the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. And you all know the Secretary has endorsed the panel, which now has 31 recommended conditions. All the states have laws that require some sort of newborn screening, and they all have laws that require some sort of birth registration. The trouble is those two programs don't necessarily interact. And so while state health departments are generally responsible for both, they sometimes exist in two different silos. And so now that we're into more and more electronic health record information, it seems an ideal time to maybe address this problem of programs not being able to tell you how many babies were screened in their state. So electronic record keeping for both activities is there in all the states. And those states that don't have electronic birth registration are almost there. Serial numbers for newborns screening blood spots exist in all states, although they may differ a little bit in their format. And hearing programs also have a responsibility to monitor how many babies are being screened, and they don't necessarily also connect to the birth certificates. And so there's a chance here to get sort of all these programs combined. And there are some requirements now coming down in the form of recommendations for 2020 for states to be able to tell how many babies they've screened and that there's an improvement in the number of babies being screened. And right now that's difficult for states to do because they don't link to birth certificates. So the records from newborn dried blood spot and newborn hearing screening records. They don't always contain the same name or other identifying information. Birth regulations don't always require that the final completion be done quickly so that they can that they're available for checking. But it is true that sometimes the birth, the blood spot screening and the hearing screening are co-managed within the health department, but not always. And management of the birth registration programs is usually completely separated and may not have this on their agenda. And that's where the big problem lies. So what about solutions to this matching? There's basically two ways you can do it. You can do it manually or you can do it electronically. Manually, as you can imagine, is a big headache to try to match all the newborn screening blood spot forms to the birth certificates, but it is being done in some of the smaller states, believe it or not. I've actually been in a state where there's a person dedicated to this all day long. Electronic matching can take sort of two forms. One is called deterministic matching, and that's where you look at an exact match with something between the two things you're matching, like a name, for instance. Unfortunately, in newborn screening, the names don't always match. So probabilistic matching is more often done, and that's where you pick some part of a field and combine it with another part, and you get some probability that this is the baby you're talking about. And so it comes up as a sort of a statistical probability this is a baby, but just in case you didn't hear, a couple more you might want to look at. So it's difficult to do a deterministic match on baby's name, as you can imagine, but it's not so difficult to do it on number if there was a number there. Some states don't allow birth registration or don't require birth registration to be so quickly, and so that's something we need to talk about separately. So as a result, newborn screening programs most often use this probabilistic matching that I'm talking about. Sometimes that's a program that takes minutes to run, sometimes it's a program that takes hours, sometimes months, depending on how many items you look at and how good you want your probabilistic matching to be. So the higher your bar is, the longer it takes, basically, so it's very difficult. So maybe the solution is to record the initial newborn dried blood spot serial number on the birth certificate and link the two databases. I mean, this is the simplest thing. People are doing it, it works. It's just that we have to convince people that this is the thing that needs to be done. So the payoffs from this sort of a linkage, the dried blood spot programs can confirm that a specimen was collected or not on all newborns. The hearing screening programs could also have a link if they collected the serial number. And birth registration databases could also utilize this to check their data, because right now it's entered by somebody and that becomes the birth record. This would allow another way to look at some information that's entered and see if it matches. So there's some benefits that way as well. There are some external things to think about here. The Clinical Laboratory Standards Institute has a standard on blood collection and filter paper that's been around for about 25 years, and for 20 of those years it's contained a suggested format for states to use as a serial number, so that if we had these in our databases and babies move between states, the field would be able to capture the same information from state to state. There's an organization called NAPSIS, which is the organization that the state birth registrars belong to, and that's the group that advises the National Center for Health Statistics on what they should be obtaining from the states in terms of vital records. And so the National Center for Health Statistics actually resides within the Centers for Disease Control. And then HHS, in addition to sort of overseeing all this, has national efforts ongoing to improve electronic records. So there are all these things come into play here. So currently, about 96% of the states have electronic birth registration. 11 states reported in to us that they have a field on the birth registration or in the birth registration that collects the newborn screening serial number. Four others had plans to do so in the near future. And of those states, four reported that this is a required field. So on the birth certificate or in the birth registration, Some states will designate certain required fields. Now, if you designate a required field, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get filled out, but there's a higher probability that it's going to be filled out. Without that, then you've got a high probability that it's not going to be filled out in most states because it's extra work and it's not required. We also were asked at one point to look at how many states are actually trying to do these sorts of linkages with any kind of database, and we found out that about 66% of the states are trying to do something. 13 states reported that they have no linkage, and 4 states didn't report into us. And again, the matching time varied from hours to months. So all that came into play when we developed some recommendations from the committee. Originally, these were fairly stiff recommendations asking that the secretary do this, the secretary do that. We were asked last year to modify those and to bring to the table the people that might be affected by this, which was basically NAPSIS and National Center for Health Statistics. And so we had some conversations with both groups. We circulated this white paper that's in your material to those groups for comments and changes. We've also circulated it to the Association of Public Health Laboratories and others. We've gotten all the feedback we think we can get, and everybody's pretty much in tune with this. The question remains as to where it is on everybody's radar. And so the feeling is among the newborn screening community that if this were to come to the attention of the Secretary's Advisory Committee and the Secretary, it might get better play in the states and there might be a better chance of getting the sort of linkages that we need. So there are, I think, 4 recommendations that you can talk about. These are things that we came up with as a committee, ran by these two groups, they agreed with. So the first one is that the Secretary's Advisory Committee should encourage state newborn screening programs to utilize a unique serial number on each initial newborn screening specimen collection device to aid in electronic tracking and identification. To facilitate harmonization, the format of this number should follow that's recommended by CLSI, which as an option includes something called the checksum character. This is a character that's put at the end of a number that is mathematically arrived at, which checks the numbers that are previously reported in that number. So you can either, for instance, if you're typing a number in, you might make a mistake, but if you had this checksum number, and you got to the checksum number, it would tell you you've made a mistake, go back and do it over. Okay, second recommendation was that the Secretary's Advisory Committee should work with NAPSIS toward a goal of including the newborn screening serial number on the birth certificate to facilitate confirming access of all newborns to timely newborn screening and to provide an external mechanism for evaluating certain demographic data records on the birth certificate and use these data for improving electronic health information service quality. Third recommendation was that the committee should work with National Center for Health Statistics toward the goal of including the serial number in the next revision of the U.S. Standard Certificate of Live Birth. Now that's something that comes out from NCHS periodically and states use as a model to what their birth registration will look like. It's not changed so often that there's a routine. It's changed when somebody, some higher official, basically, asks them to look at it and consider changes. And this is that sort of a higher official in our minds. And if there's a choice of including it as a required field or not, it should be a required field. And the reason for that is we've already had experience in states that don't require it, and it's not being filled out. And states that do require it are having it filled out. And last, state birth registrars and state newborn screening program directors should be encouraged to consider ways in which electronic data validation of the demographic information collected by the two activities can be used for cross-validation and data quality improvement. So they're pretty much no-brainers in my mind, but how we implement this and how it takes place at the states is the issue. In terms of cost, We actually went to the states that have implemented it and asked what their cost was for implementation. And in all cases, believe it or not, there was no cost because their birth certificates had just been updated, and they took this as an opportunity to increase the fields. And so they didn't charge for it. Now, I went to NAPSIS and asked them to look at some other people, and they did. And they found that a couple of people said, well, if you put a field in our database, it's probably going to cost you about $25,000 or $30,000. So we really don't know what the impact would be. It depends on the sophistication of the database that you're talking about, when it was last updated, you know, what the agreements are with the vendors and that sort of thing. So that's it.
All right. Thank you, Brad. All right. This presentation is open for discussion. Don?
So thanks, Brad. I'm just curious, are these data only going to reside at the state level? Is there any, are any of these data amalgamated up to a national level? And what about families that move from one state to another? Would this help in a situation like that?
Right. There is no national database. There is no plan for a national database. It is kept at the state level. And if you look in the paper, there's actually a section in the paper that talks about concerns about privacy. And the point of that paragraph was to sort of alleviate people's fears that this was going to be used for some sort of national tracking database. You know, we've got 50 or 51 programs here. They're all different. It's highly unlikely that at any one point in time they'll all agree on anything. And so having a national database or even having an interoperative national database of some sort is pretty unlikely. Now, we're asking about the field size because it is possible for people to move from state to state, and actually programs hand people off from state to state. And so this would be a way for them to put in their database that person and not have a negative effect on the data.
Jeff and then Dear.
I'm looking at our new matrix of levels or nature of support. So if this is approved, is this something that would go forward for the secretary to act on, or would this be informational only? Or, I mean, most of this occurring at state level, but is there secretarial action, HHS action that's associated with the recommendations?
So, of course, that's your debate, but in my mind, I think it should go forward to the secretary with a recommendation that the secretary do these things or share these things or do them in the form of a letter, if nothing else, to the states to make them aware of the issues and the possibilities. But again, it's for you to decide.
Dieter and then Stephen.
What if you have birth records or certificates where there is no number? So basically the screen did not happen. Is anything going to happen then, or do we just record that it wasn't done?
Well, so that's the point. The hope is that programs, if they get into this mode of checking, would be able to say in a fairly quick basis, that baby hadn't been screened, let's go figure out what happened and let's get him in for screening. Right now, that's not happening.
And then you add that later to the birth certificate if the screening actually happened?
Yeah.
And if the parents refused?
Well, if it were a mandate of the state that this number were on the registration, then there wouldn't be this sort of refusal. It's the same thing with the birth certificates required. Newborn screening is required.
Some states you can opt out. In some states, such as Minnesota, you can opt out after the screening was done.
So there would have to be some sort of mechanism to handle that. I mean, we could say opt it out or whatever.
Let's see, before we had Stephen and then Alan.
Yeah, it would appear that we'd be voting on a recommendation one, because it does ask the secretary to have the National Center for Health Statistics to do some stuff, right?
That's what I would hope.
Alan?
I may be raising a point that doesn't really need to be raised or isn't worthy of raising, but is there any wisdom, Brad, do you have any, maybe Jeff, others who have some expertise in this area, any feeling about how, going back to Don's earlier presentation and how much we need to be alert to anything that may impede the public avidity for newborn screening, any thought about how this might have any impact whatsoever on those who have concerns about the government having data on their babies, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, my experience would indicate that there's always going to be somebody somewhere who doesn't like what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's an educational thing, I think. We still have to pay attention to the fact that these are programs where we don't know if every baby's getting screened, and this is for the benefit of the baby, not the parent necessarily. And this is a way to check and make sure every baby's getting the service that's their due. So. But I'm sure there will be somebody somewhere who doesn't see it that way.
Ready?
And I'm Brad? Brad?
Yep.
It's Fred. I just wanted to comment that for us, we've been wanting to do this a long time, and we do it manually. We can get the tapes and do matching. But we've met with Vital Stats a couple times, and they're the ones that are resistant. So if there could be some sort of recommendation, it would help us.
Okay. Freddie?
I am concerned about possible implications also for undocumenteds, and I mean, at the end of the day, it's still the state having a new number for every birth, and whether it's national or state, it's still government. So we should be well aware of those implications, and certainly the secretary will be.
Some people have made the point that the number is already out there. It's just a matter that it's not being recorded. And while people may be moving in and out who might not have had screening, most pediatricians would try to have them screened if they go to a pediatrician.
Sure.
I'm aware of that.
We have a law against that, but I bet Arizona doesn't.
I have a couple of technical points about these recommendations, one of which is the advisory committee can make advice to the secretary. That is all they do. So the recommendations where the advisory committee does X, Y, and Z are problematic, and so I think we need to look at these very carefully. I would ask you to look at them very carefully and see if there's a way that we could frame those so we're still within the scope of what an advisory committee does. And also, please keep in mind the sensitivities that Freddie raised about where we'll put the secretary in terms of public perception and consideration. It's one thing to ask her to say that for those states that want to do this, it's a great idea. It's another thing to ask her to say that all states should be doing this.
So I don't think the recommendations actually say that all states should be doing anything. It just says they should be aware of, they should work towards, that sort of thing. And like I said, originally we had some stronger wording, and we've modified that wording at the request of the executive committee before, and we have worked with National Center for Health Statistics and NAPSIS, and they are in agreement that this is something that should be done, but they're also in pretty much agreement that it's not on their radar unless somebody brings it to their attention. And we could do that through this committee, or we can go individually, state by state, try to get a registrar, you know, try to convince a registrar that this is something worthwhile, and so on.
Alexa?
Is there any indication that funding is a significant barrier to states actually utilizing or coming online with, for instance, going with a serial number? You mentioned that only 11 states, and you mentioned a dollar figure on how much, at least for one state, it costs for them to actually add a field, or one organization to add a field. In general, do you have a sense of, for those states that have not gone to it or would like to but are having challenges, that funding is an issue?
Funding was brought up as an issue by NAPSIS, and we took a look at that to see whether that was an issue. My feeling is it's not that big of an issue, because most of the time the state's not going to do it until they make a change anyway. They're not going to go to the trouble for this one thing to go make a big change. The exceptions to that were some states that said, well, our database is easy to change, and, you know, it's going to cost us, you know, $20,000 or $25,000. Now, I'm from Texas, and I worked long and hard to get this put on the Texas birth certificate years ago. It got put there when they went to electronic birth registration, but last year it was taken off because nobody was putting data into it and they wanted to use that field for something else. Now I'm told that there's been some conversations back and forth, what would it cost to put it back on, and they're saying, oh, well, this is going to be a major change and it's going to be $300,000. So it varies depending on who's interested, and if you get somebody who's interested who thinks this is a good idea, it's not going to be very much money. If you get somebody who's resistant because they got other things they want to do, it's going to cost a lot.
Jeff?
Can we put the recommendations back up? I'm not sure I understand Sarah's point, so I want to see what they say.
They're also in this paper that should be in your notebook.
We should be able to get them back up.
We're working. Okay.
Thank you.
So there's the first one. It talks about encouraging state programs to use serial number on each newborn screening specimen form that complies with the national recommendation from CLSI.
So this is where wording's really important. Is it the advisory committee, you're asking the advisory committee to encourage, or are you asking the secretary to encourage? Because it's a significant difference. If the advisory committee thinks it's a good idea, we can send it as an FYI. If we're asking the secretary to encourage, it's asking her to take action. And these are some nuances that we need to have clear, and that's why we have the nature of support in the different levels.
You want to see the next, what do you want to throw?
Well, it does
but
say
the, that the advisory committee doesn't have the authority to advise the states independently, right? It has to advise the secretary.
Correct. Right. But we could say that the advisory committee supports this as an option if you guys voted on that, and then send it as FYI to the secretary. Okay. There's two different options.
So this wording actually arose from conversations we had with the previous committee, and were changed because the previous committee wanted this kind of wording. Now, that's fine with me. I mean, my main goal is to get it done, and I don't care how the wording is. So change the wording however you need to change it. You okay. Want to see the second one?
Well, so wait, before we get to the second one.
Just a minute. You're going to have to repeat what you just said because your microphone wasn't working.
Here. Oh. Thanks.
There we go.
So I was just going to say, maybe we can decide what action we want the secretary to take, whether we want this to be an FYI for her or we want this to be an action for her to be more active in. And then we can reword it accordingly. That's just my sense.
Do you want to take it recommendation by recommendation or all six of them together?
Well, I almost feel like we can four of them. I can bundle some of them in my mind.
Yeah, if you.
So I don't know what others feel about it.
I think that's a reasonable suggestion. And so if you want to, if there's additional discussion that we need to have about the benefits and the role this might have, we can do that. But if not, why don't we entertain a motion based on Colleen's comment about whether this should be something that the committee should advise the secretary to consider, or whether we ask her directly to contact the states with the recommendation. Michael?
Hey, Jim. I don't know if I have enough information to make a recommendation related to what Alan and Freddie raised, the concerns about the perception of government intrusiveness. I don't know how this might or might not impact on that. Do we have any information to guide our recommendation?
Not really.
Okay. Well, we do have 11 states that are doing this.
Yep.
Is there any concern in those 11
states?
Those states
have not expressed any problem
okay,
with it.
That would, I mean, so. You got... One out of five states
kind of,
is already
kind of
doing this.
Pre-imposed, they haven't...
I haven't asked that question. I can go back and ask that question. But when I asked for the information coming from the states and I gave them open-ended questions that they could relate to, and there was never that comment made. No comment.
Which states are doing it? Maybe there's someone in the room who could comment from that state.
I don't have all the data, but Colorado, Michigan, New Mexico, New York, Oklahoma, Oregon, South Dakota, Utah. Utah.
Utah.
Wisconsin is another.
Please come forward and to microphone.
This is Lisa Forschbaum from California Department of Public Health. I just wanted to point out that that first part of the recommendation about having a universal number used across state, I understand and appreciate the importance of that. But from a program evaluation perspective within each state, it's not critical to have that common number, quite frankly.
Right.
If we in California would like to find out how many babies we're in fact screening instead of coming up with an estimate, which is what we do now, we would just need to have that number on the birth certificate. It doesn't have to be the same number that other, you know, the format doesn't have to be universal. So that's why I think it's important to maybe separate some of these recommendations.
Yes. And then we'll go back to Don.
In case it's helpful to have a few anecdotal comments from the states. So in Massachusetts, it's not incorporated into electronic birth certificate information. My comments would be exactly as Fred's, where I've met with them a number of times. I would love it to be there. It's just resistance. It's not because of concerns about privacy. It's not really stated as concerns about cost. It's more like a lot of people want things, and we have to be very careful about what's included, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't seem to get high enough. So it would be helpful to have some kind of a thing that's beyond us, you know, from a national recommendation. On the privacy thing, personally, I'm one who tends to be very concerned about privacy issues. I'm the one that gets the calls from the parents, and it's this particular issue, I'm not concerned about it nearly as much as some other things. I think the electronic birth certificate already exists as a government database. The filter paper number is already in our database. There is always a danger in linkage, but I can just anecdotally again say that for me personally, it's not one of the things that I get concerned about so much about the privacy concerns, even though I am very concerned about that on some other fields. It's just anecdotal piece for you.
Okay, we have Don and then Alexis.
And then also Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who? Oh, okay. Let's get another state experience.
So. Thank you. I'm Bob Bowman. I'm the Director of Genomics and Newborn Screening in Indiana. I've had some discussions with our registrar about this issue, and I've actually spoken to some hospitals directly about this. Really, the biggest thing is it's going to impact the vital records program a lot more than it's going to affect newborn screening. You know, I think that's one of the key things. In terms of the number, the actual format of the number is not as important to us as the number itself, and I think that alleviates the privacy concern on our side because every card has a number, and you know we are aware as of that number as a newborn screening program. So from that standpoint, as long as we don't necessarily have to mandate a certain number, it's not as much of an issue. In terms of what issues, you know, how will this impact vital registry? I think it's important to recognize that we are not all communicating with the same people at the birthing centers. So when we did speak to the birthing centers, what we heard was there was concern how they were going to get this information, the individuals who were actually entering the information into the birth certificate. There's also concern about transfer babies and babies who had religious waivers. You know, how would that be addressed? Trying to think of some other issues because it's been a while since we had that discussion. But I think that those were really the main concerns that we had. And that's why making it a mandatory field was really questioned.
Thank you. Any other state experience?
Okay. I think, Don?
Yeah, so I think I know the answer to this, but Brad, remind me, what's the problem we're trying to fix here? Is the problem that that there are some babies that might not have been screened, and so we want some mechanism in place so that there can be a cross-check between the screening program and the actual birth record?
Basically, that's all right.
Okay.
In addition to that, there are some requirements coming down to the states to be able to tell how many babies were actually screened in their state, which they cannot do, and this mm-hmm. facilitates mm-hmm. that, but it's mainly the reason you said.
Right.
That's quality.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I'm completely off base here, but it seems like this might be getting down to a level of specificity for states that's unnecessary, and that what we ought to be, that what we could do as a committee is say that every state ought to have a policy in place to assure that there could be a check between the births and the screening program, and there are different ways to do it, and this would be an example of one of them. You've really been in this a lot longer than I have, but it just seems to me if we're not trying to create a national data set that we can harmonize in that kind of way, what you're doing is, I think, trying to harmonize some kind of reporting process or procedure.
Yeah, the problem
is maybe there were alternate ways to do it. I don't know.
If you read through the paper, you'll see some discussion about ways to do it and ways not to do it. The big problem is that if it's not on the birth certificate, then some other mechanism, if a number is not on the birth certificate, right. Then some other mechanism comes into play that gets the same information off the birth, doesn't get the same information, but gets information off the birth certificate. And it's usually like, you know, the first two letters of the last name, the first letter of the first name, third number of the birth date, you know, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger depending on which state you're in. And then that data may not be run until all birth certificates are in at 6 months. Or whatever, and so it's not very good at checking to see if a baby got screened in a timely manner, so that if he didn't, you can get them screened and they can get treated. And you know, it's so simple to put the number there and just connect the programs. But the trouble, like you're hearing, is that the state registrars, this isn't their program. You know, their program is birth certificates. And they've got people coming to them wanting everything on the birth certificate. The reason this one seems to fit better is because it's a state requirement that every baby be screened. I agree there's some issues about those babies who might refuse, but I think there are ways to get, I mean, in lots of cases, those babies get a number anyway, and that number carries with it the refusal. But some may not do that. But there are ways to address that, so.
Alexis?
I just want to sort of explore perhaps a slightly different use in addition to the one that Don mentioned in terms of wanting to fill in the blanks in the early newborn period. Another area that's becoming increasingly problematic is people asking about their sickle cell trait status. Mm-hmm. And that the vast majority of states at this point do actually detect trait. And that sometimes that question isn't actually asked in the newborn period. It's actually requested years later. And the opportunity to actually be able to tie one's trait status over a lifetime, there, you know, we're finding that there perhaps are health implications for trait status, and in this way, what you're describing, in fact, may be a very intriguing way, not just for research purposes, but for clinical management, to actually, in fact, be able to tie back. The alternative is what we use right now, and that is simply actually retesting people who, unfortunately, know were already tested.
Yeah, you're right. That's been a huge problem lately with people trying to match up names, and their name was different, or you know, it's spelled different, or whatever. So, yeah.
Jeff?
Well, I would just go back to I think Brad's earlier comment, which I very much agree with. This is just a no-brainer, and I think Brad's done a nice job talking to the relevant groups and agencies to find out whether we're stepping on toes here. And I think the answer is no. That folks, everybody supports this and thinks it's a good idea, and it sounds like the states would like a little bit of encouragement to bring this a little farther forward on the stove. And so if we can craft language in a way that doesn't overstep our bounds, you know, we're not telling states what to do, we're simply saying this is a really good idea, you ought to think about it. And that doesn't sound to me like it's overstepping. Otherwise, this whole committee is going to be handcuffed in trying to deal with state-based newborn screening programs if we're too sensitive about that particular issue. Now, exactly how the language ought to play out with the secretary, I think, is a different question for the one recommendation that I think is more relevant to her authority.
Andrea.
I think we can address the privacy issues by having the number not be related to disease, not linked to disease. So it's just linked to the test that you actually had a newborn screen, not to go any further to say what your results. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a number and not related to disease at all, or no disease.
So no. Okay. All right. Additional comments? All right. So I guess the two issues are, one, the set of four recommendations and the view of the committee. This will require a vote, so there will need to be a, someone will need to make a motion. But then the second is, at what frame do we want to place it in terms of our level of support for what goes to the secretary? Then I'm sure that we can put together a letter that reflects the wishes of the committee as to how to approach the secretary.
Could we see again the recommendations, and specifically one that relates to the secretary's authority?
Okay, so we're going to go back to the four recommendations, and I think we've already indicated that if the committee cannot work with the states, that we need to recommend that the secretary consider X, Y, and Z.
I guess it's the first one.
Colleen, before we...
I was just going to say the same thing. I think they need to be reworded in light
right.
of that.
Okay. All right.
So from a programmatic standpoint, we need to know what level of support and what you're asking for in order to reword them, or else it'll have to wait till the next advisory committee meeting to be voted on.
We should stop there.
That's the one right there.
So I would make a proposal, and that is that over lunch, we reword them and come back. Does that sound
okay.
like a reasonable thing?
If everybody's in favor of that, that sounds reasonable.
I ask that the federal ex officio members, if that will allow you enough time to consider this. Alan?
He probably needs a lawyer to sit in on.
But it is not a trivial question because they are expected
right.
to represent their agency. And so...
Are we talking about... action of the secretary, or are we talking about, I guess...
We haven't talked about it.
Okay. But I don't know if we need to get the sense from the whole entire group on what way we're going to take it before we start wording it.
So Sarah had asked me earlier how I would see this going down, and I said, to me, it's a letter, you know, this particular one is the secretary says to NCHS, you need to put this serial number on the standard certificate of live birth. The other three are basically a letter from the secretary to the states saying these are important issues and you need to be addressing these in your state. I mean, to me, that's what I see, that would be what I would see the secretary doing. So.
So you would say this would be a recommendation that the secretary take action on all four?
But that action would only be to raise the profile
right.
of the issue at the state and not to have any sort of administrative or legislative action.
Exactly.
So speaking from my agency, and since one of them does involve part of the agency, and we have already talked, but we haven't briefed the director, so I would have to clear that.
All right.
So I would say that we revise these accordingly with your guidance, and you know, present them to you either before next meeting for your comments. But now that at least you're all briefed on it.
Okay. Sound reasonable? Then we would then revise them, distribute them, postpone the vote until next meeting. That sound? I'm sorry, Brad.
Yeah,
I know we
wanted
to also
like,
today, but
like permission to move forward with this paper because it's every time I do it, it's old data again. You know,
right.
So we'd like to go ahead and get something out.
What is the title of the paper?
It's in the
because that, that's
the title
what
of
makes
the paper is
difference.
Improving data quality and quality assurance in newborn screening by including the blood spot serial collection device serial number on birth certificates or whatever.
As long as it doesn't reference that it's the secretary's recommendations,
right.
Then you're okay.
And this is a committee product, by the way. It's not just my product. It's Colleen's product.
So then it'll have to go through CDC clearance. But as long as it doesn't say it's an advisory committee product. I'm sorry, Dieter.
So, and this paper is in the documents that we, on the server, or I can't find it.
Yeah, it is.
It's in the briefing book?
Should be in the briefing
book.
It is
in the briefing book.
It was electronically sent to
us. Tab 6.
It does say it's from the long-term follow-up subcommittee of the Secretary's Advisory Committee.
Yeah,
so
that
then
is problematic. It can't be, that can't be in the title.
Hmm? Can you open it?
Until it's been voted on at the very least.
But we weren't we going to vote on it? Wasn't that the vote today? To vote on the paper?
January 12th.
He said it doesn't have the recommendations. It does. Oh, okay.
So where are we with this now? Were we going to revise this over lunch and bring it back?
No.
We were not going to do that.
No.
The ex officio members need to run it by their agency heads. So we will revise it and we will have you vote on it, but it just won't be done today because of the revisions and the fact that that it has substantial impact.
All right.
For us still to do the revisions today so that the different agencies are requesting, know exactly what they're requesting? Is it worth us still doing the revisions today even if we don't vote on them?
Yeah, I think if you want to discuss, I mean, I think it's going to take a little time to do the revisions. So I think that maybe it would be best to do the revisions offline and then send them to the committee members for their review and response. We'll come to a consensus so that then we can go to the federal partners and have them specifically work with their agencies for approval. That sound fair? Jeff?
Yeah, I'm still confused. Do the other agencies have to approve this for publication purposes, or do they have to approve it prior to the time that this committee can make a recommendation?
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. One is the is making recommendations to the secretary that have this potential impact before the agencies can decide on whether to. I mean, I would guess based on what we had, the agencies could vote on recommendations as they stand. We've decided that we're going to modify those recommendations, and therefore they need to see the modifications and consider those with their agencies before they would have the opportunity to vote. Is that correct, the way I'm stating that?
Maybe we should, there's an elephant in the room, I think. When the secretary gets a recommendation, she turns it back to something called the Interagency Coordinating Committee on whatever, newborn screening or whatever. So then it comes back to the rest, to these agencies here, to try and tell the secretary whether she should follow through, and if she's going to follow through, some options for how she does that. So the recommendation has implications for us, the ex officio federal agencies here.
The other option is the ex officios would have to abstain, I think is the, and there is enough people otherwise to vote if you want to go forward and vote on this.
That's the other option.
Yeah, that is the other option.
That's right.
From a procedural standpoint.
And are there enough people?
Everybody's here.
Steve?
It seems to me that the language change is just a formality. We're just changing the secretary for our committee, which is appropriate that we do that. But the general concept, I think we all understand. And if we send a recommendation for the secretary, she can either accept it or not based on what the people think. So if we postpone this till May, we're just setting it back another 4 months. And to me, it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This is actually coming from the subcommittee Therefore, it says the SACHDNC should. If it comes from this committee, the next step would be the secretary should.
I would just need a form of a motion to accept these with modifications as...
I will, go ahead.
I'll second.
I will move that I'm comfortable level one on all four.
Second.
All right, is there any further discussion?
Okay, Michael? Let me just, yeah, and again, I'm new to this, but I just think that if we're going to be assigning a national ID to every single blood spot, I know kind of our agency would have a lot of questions about the potential impact on privacy. I just want to make sure that there's enough kind of assurances around that issue, especially for certain certain subpopulations, undocumented immigrants, kind of racial ethnic subgroups, which weren't, I don't think, have been adequately addressed. So I think if we're doing that today, I don't think I could adequately represent the opinion of my agency.
So my comment would be it's not a national number, it's a state number, and it's a state number that already exists.
And I think the recommendation is that the secretary make the states aware of the of this, and so that they can consider this as a method.
Michael, can you clarify the? I'm trying to envision exactly the scenario that you're raising. Why would adding this number, assuming that this number is not tied to actual results, there's already a birth certificate that already has been generated for that baby. Why would adding the number cause additional concerns for someone who's undocumented?
Well, you're adding a kind of ID number to a dry blood spot. Right?
So the number is on the blood spot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the proposed action is putting on the yeah. birth certificate,
correct.
Which could then be traced back to the newborn.
See, right now, in every state, there is a database of some sort on the newborn screening specimen which has a serial number. And in some cases, it may even have, as we've seen lately, the Social Security number. And so the issue has been on the listserv, what do we do with these states that are using Social Security number? This is a way out for those states in a way, because they can use this serial number and not have to use the Social Security number, although some say just use the last four digits. And
but I think that it underestimates the concern about residual blood spot, because I think that there is still, there are other issues, as Dr. Liu pointed out. It's not simply a matter of a number and a birth certificate linking. And Dr. Liu is saying that he's concerned that there are other implications that we're just not aware of, and that we, I understand what the concept is, and I understand some of where everybody's coming from, being a former medical director, but I think that Dr. Liu is just raising the question, the concern from his point of view, that there's probably unanticipated consequences.
I'm not saying that there aren't. I just want to understand what I'm trying to envision a scenario where that would be a concern, and I just really for education, for information, I just wanted to understand what kind of concerns have been raised about things like that.
Right, and really all I'm asking for is kind of more information. You know, as what the perception of parents, especially parents in certain subgroups, that may be particularly sensitized to this issue.
Is there a way to use a number that's not related to the blood spot? I mean, we're actually. Is that the whole point?
Yeah.
Well,
see that's what's happening now. They're using probabilistic matching, which sort of creates another number in a sense. It may be an alpha numeric or whatever. And that's what happens, that you create that, and then you try to do those kind of matches, and it's difficult to do. And this is the simplest. And that number's there. I mean, every blood spot has a number. The, The bigger question is, what about those babies get 2 and 3? And so if you read this paper closely, it says take the initial number, not the second and the third. I mean, those may be linked somewhere down the road, but we really want to know initially, was that baby screened, and was it screened timely, and is there anything we need to do if it wasn't?
Okay, we have two from the audience, Nancy and Ann.
People seem to be getting hung up on numbers, and the reality is that the birth certificate has a name, and the newborn dried blood spot has a name, but those names are often not matchable. And so, you know, people, I think, would agree that names tend to be more identifiers than some random number. And so this is really about facilitating that match. And whether it's a number or a name, I don't know if that helps you to think about this. I mean, the birth certificate has a name. The dried blood spot that comes in has a name. We try to make sure that every baby with a name in the birth certificate, in the birth vital records, has a blood spot. And the only way we can do that is by matching names and names and addresses and things like that. And when you try to read the printing on the blood spot, when you see how people misspell names, it gets kind of crazy. So it's really number. I don't know. That helps.
Okay, so Nancy, and then.
Sorry. The introduction. So Brad, you've obviously done a lot of work with the NCHS and with NAPSIS, and I'm just wondering whether it might be helpful in the committee's deliberations and various potential concerns if there's some sort of official correspondence from each of these other agencies with which you've worked to understand their position, because really we're recommending part of their function.
So, is Matt on? So initially I met with the executive director of NAPSIS, who was getting ready to retire. He was in favor of it. So then we waited till he retired and met with the new one. And in the meantime, he sent it to the board, and the board sent back a message that it was fine. Then the new director came in. She didn't know he'd sent it to the board. She sent a request up to the board, and the board says, we already saw this, and we thought it was fine. They offered to send us something if we really need it. So at this point, Jeff and Colleen and I were on the phone with them, actually, talking about this, NCHS as well. They said they really didn't have a concern if we thought we needed it, and we thought, maybe naively, that the conversation that the three of us heard would be enough to satisfy you. If it's not, we can get those letters. It's not going to be difficult to do. And if you feel like that's something that you would like to have before it goes out of here, we can handle it.
Carol, did you have a question? No? You did. Okay. I'm sorry. We had one more here.
My name is Lisa Boyno. I'm from New Hampshire. I oversee the newborn screening program there. And we've been doing the probabilistic linkage for, I think, 5 or 6 years. Now we're a very small state with under 15,000 births a year, but we do it every day. And it does take a little bit of work to match. So on the one hand, having the number on both of the documents would be helpful in terms of staffing resources to make that linkage easier. On the other hand, New Hampshire is the live free or die state and known for heightened concern related to privacy. And I have had conversations with some folks that have expressed, while they're fine with that kind of linkage, I think having a number that link the two and make any future kind of connections easier might be of greater concern to them.
Thank you. Carol?
Two questions. One is probably for later that has to do with process, that is very interesting to watch the dynamic and the effect of a vote on anything going to the secretary with the ex officio members voting. I have been on one I've actually been a member of one other committee, CLIAC, and the ex officios don't vote, and I was staff for SAGAS, and the ex officios don't vote. They're there to provide, anyway, it's just a topic for future discussion. What I wanted to say about the privacy issue is I have a close link to some members. There's actually a privacy community, and therefore, when I first heard about this and thought it was really scary, I took it back home and was told it's really not an issue because it's all information that is already existing. It's not a national identification. I got an earful about how the Congress has shut down an attempt at a national identifier, but when I talked to some of the people who were involved in that process, this is different from perception. It's different from what we just heard about New Hampshire and what's been raised. But the true experts in the privacy community think this is a non-issue. I shouldn't say I'm actually speaking for them. I'm interpreting what I heard.
Thank you. All right.
Divorce me.
Denise?
So maybe I've been watching too many presidential debates and reading too many other documents about what can happen with retained dry blood spots. And they can be used for law enforcement purposes. So depending on how the immigration debate goes, and maybe I'm paranoid, but I'm tending to lean. I guess what this is coming out to is that the paper perhaps needs to go into the pros and cons of doing this. No? Okay. Just.
Okay. All right. Let's go. Carol, then Jeff.
I think perhaps it might be possible to point out, Denise's comment made me realize, that link can always be made, okay? Having the number makes it easier and faster so that you can monitor newborn screening. It doesn't change the fact that, and we did this in Colorado because we actually had to answer the question, are all the babies being screened? And we did it, you know, matching deterministically, and then we did probabilistically, and then we did it by hand. That link can be made. This is that nothing changes the fact that the link can be made. We got names, we got addresses, we got birth dates, we got lots of stuff. Putting the number on there doesn't mean that the link can be made. It means that the link can be made in a timely fashion to monitor newborn screening. The link can be made. This doesn't create the link.
Thank you. Okay. Who else? There was one more. Jeff.
Yeah, and I just see this as a way of improving the efficacy and efficiency of health departments. And to a certain extent, if you don't like what health departments are doing, that's a concern about privacy. But, you know, if this is a good set of activities we're doing, then I don't think the privacy issues are even on the page. And I guess I don't understand the connection with the dried blood spots. I see that really as a very different issue. I mean, they're being saved or not saved, independent of whether we can do this kind of matching in a more effective way. So we shouldn't link it. I mean, we want to stay away from that because.
Okay, so I think we have to keep in mind that this is something that is being done at a state level, and I think Don's comment earlier is appropriate that as we think about this, each state might have a different solution, but if we go with this as a recommendation for this as a potential solution, that makes sense, and I think that's the modification that we're talking about. So we have a motion on the floor, a second, and we've had our discussion. So I think if there's no other questions or discussion, we'll move to a vote. So first, is there anyone who is planning to abstain? So we have, okay. So let's start in the middle of the group this time.
Fred Laurie. We're voting yes on number one. Is that how it goes?
Well, we're looking at all four together is what's on the table.
So the yeah.
But
the
level one,
is,
right?
Yeah.
Level one. I'm sorry.
The motion is to amend all of the recommendations to say instead of the advisory committee should, that the secretary should, and do all four of those with the idea that there will be action taken on all four.
I vote yes.
Steve McDonough.
Aye.
Charlie Homer. Charlie. Dieter.
Yes.
Jeff Botkin.
Yes.
Joe Bocchini.
Yes.
Kathy Wicklund.
Yes.
Alexis Thompson.
Yes.
Andrea Williams?
Yes.
Don Bailey?
Yes.
Charlie, are you on the phone?
I'm here. I need to abstain. Thank you.
Okay. So there's no vote, so the ayes have it.
All right.
It will go forward.
Okay. And so we'll modify the wording and have the committee review that for.
There's no mechanism for that, so I'll modify the wording as asked.
Okay, so the
question, okay. In the paper, can we modify the wording and now put this out as a recommendation from the committee?
Yes, you can.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Now we're...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
All right. Okay.
Can we do it?
Yeah, we can do that. Now it's 12:15 to 1:15, but then it starts at 1:30.
So
we'll just
so
wait until
1:15.
Okay. All right, so we're going to now break for lunch. We're a little bit behind, but we still need to get back here at 1:15 so that we can get through the agenda on time so people can catch flights. So 1:15, we're going to reconvene. Thank you.